Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine with your co-hosts Selma Abu Ayesh and Sharif Fahm. In this program, we discuss issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. News and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, what is your reason not to? It is Sunday, April 4th, 2010. We begin with one very important event announcement, followed by a summary of news highlights and what they mean. A benefit fundraiser will be held for the children of Gaza on Sunday, April 25th, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Campus Center Ballroom of the University of Massachusetts in Boston, located at 100 Morrissey Boulevard in Dorchester. All donations will go toward providing a clean water supply system for the children of the Beit Hanun Preparatory School for Boys in the Burej refugee camp in Gaza. This is a project of the non-profit organization Middle East Children's Alliance, or MICA, founded in 1988. MICA has been working for years for the rights and well-being of children in Palestine, Lebanon, and Iraq, and regularly sends shipments of aid, builds playgrounds, and supports projects that make life better for women and children. Please mark your calendars for this very important event announcement. Sunday, April 25th, at the Campus Center Ballroom of the University of Massachusetts in Boston, located at 100 Morrissey Boulevard in Dorchester. Remember, there is virtually no clean drinking water in Gaza. This event is crucially important.
Now for a summary of news highlights. We have all heard about the settlements Israel is building in occupied Arab East Jerusalem. Even the corporate media have reported on the tension Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has caused during the last couple of weeks by publicly defying President Obama's request that he desist from settlement construction and engage in meaningful negotiations with the Palestinian Authority. We've seen that play, or variations of it, reenacted for more than 40 years. For more than 40 years, Israel has been engaged in building illegal settlements and continuing the ethnic cleansing of Palestine it had started in late 1947, early 1948, before it declared itself a state. For more than 40 years, since 1967, the U.S. has provided the funding for the illegal settlements, despite the fact that all settlements are considered illegal under international and U.S. law. For 40 years, the U.S. financed the demolition of Palestinian homes and provided the fighter planes and the tanks, the helicopters Israel routinely uses to attack Palestinian civilians to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel. And most recently, the U.S. financed the siege of Gaza and approved the savage massacre of the helplessly imprisoned Palestinian civilians in Gaza. There never was any of the daylight between the U.S. and Israel that concerns Secretary Clinton so much. We wish there were, for Israel's countless killings and demolitions may as well have been committed by the U.S. Make no mistake, behind every bullet, every tank shell, every rocket that killed and maimed the tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians over the years, there was and continues to be an American finger at the trigger. The siege of Gaza is an American siege of Gaza. The assaults on Palestinian population centers to drive Palestinian civilians out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel are American war crimes perpetrated against the people of Palestine. So what makes the current public flap any different from the political theater to which we were treated for so many years? In the past, a weak slap on the wrist was punctuated with generous winking by which Israel understood that a rebuke was only for public consumption and that Israel could continue to do as it pleased. This time around, there was no winking. Secondly, and much more importantly, Secretary Clinton's rebuke came on the heels of a blunt briefing given to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen, by the much-respected Central Command commander, General David Petraeus, in which General Petraeus warned that Israeli intransigence on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was fomenting anti-American feelings and jeopardizing U.S. standing in the region. This was the very first time a respected high U.S. official publicly portrayed Israeli policy as running counter to American national interests. The future importance of that characterization, if it sticks, cannot be overemphasized. What can we expect next? If history be prologue, we go back for clues of to the genesis of the current settlement construction flap in May of last year. According to an article in the New York Times, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said on Wednesday, May 27, 2009, he, meaning the president, wants to see a stop to settlements, not some settlements, not outposts, not natural growth exceptions. Talking to reporters after a meeting with the Egyptian Foreign Minister Ahmed Abul Ghid, she said, "This is our position. This is what we have communicated very clearly." Nevertheless, Mr. Netanyahu openly defied the President and Secretary of State and continued with his construction in occupied East Jerusalem. And what did the President do about it? Nothing. Mr. Obama lost his nerve. He simply absorbed the insult and recast the direct peace negotiations into so-called, quote-unquote, proximity talks. Recall that Mr. Obama once promised, upon being asked about his position vis-à-vis Israel, that he would conduct his foreign policy according to the best national interest of the U.S. Secretary Clinton's reaction was entirely in keeping with President's position. Yet she was driven to humble herself before the AIPAC in a pathetic display of servile groveling, swearing fealty to Israel, and begging for understanding of her reasoning for rebuking Mr. Netanyahu. Quote, she says, "Let me assure you, for President Obama and for me," she whined, her voice slowly rising to a strident pitch, "and for this entire administration, our commitment to Israel's security and Israel's future is rock solid, unwavering, enduring, and forever." End of quote. To the question, what can we expect next? The markers are clear. Israel has rightly gauged Mr. Obama as a wuss who can be counted on to lose his nerve when confronted. Israel is now emboldened to openly defy or insult the U.S. with impunity, something its governments would never have dreamed of doing in the past. Under the Obama administration, the U.S. has become Israel's client state. Current U.S. irritation with Israel is not expected to go beyond the stage of words. Thus, the situation today remains the same as it has been for more than 60 years. No help can be expected from the U.S. to end its full complicity and support for Israeli violence in Palestine. It is therefore up to civil society to nonviolently exert sufficient pressure on Israel to forego its expansionist ambitions and end its murderous assaults on Palestinian civilian population centers. In July 2005, more than 170 Palestinian NGOs issued a call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel until it complies with international law and universal principles of human rights. The international BDS movement has grown tremendously since then and has recorded numerous successes. Most of these successes, however, have occurred in Europe, although successes in the U.S. are slowly mounting. For the interview section of our program, I hand it over to my co-host, Sharif.
Here to discuss this subject, we are very pleased to welcome Ms. Miki Zakht, Program Officer for ICCO, the Interchurch Organization for Development Cooperation, a Christian development agency based in Holland. ICCO is working against poverty and injustice all over the world. In the Middle East, ICCO is focusing on a just peace for Palestine and Israel. Previously, Miki Zakht worked for Amnesty International on Iran. Miki Zakht is educated as a philosopher at the University of Amsterdam. Thank you so much, Ms. Miki Zakht, for being our guest on Easter Sunday. Our best wishes for a happy Easter. Welcome to our program, as Mickey Zacht, and thank you for being our guest on Easter Sunday.
Happy Easter for you, too.
Thank you. Much of the success of the international BDS movement has come from Europe. The United States has had relatively few successes, although they're slowly mounting. Have you given much thought to why this is so? What can we in the United States learn from you in Europe? For example, are there general approaches that you have found more fruitful than others?
Well, I'm not a specialized in the U.S. Campaigning, but I can tell you what we do, and I hope we can inspire you. We pick a subject which is a symbol, like dates or flowers or a company, and we research how their ties with the occupation is being set up. As ICA, we can support many researchers into economic ties with the Dutch economy, for example, and we can share the research with activist groups. In this research, we found that, for example, Ahava has sold products in Holland and elsewhere in the world, in the States as well, as made in Israel. And on the Dutch consumer law, this is fraud. There are many other settlement products which can be found in our shops as being sold in as made in Israel. And we found action groups who picked it up and protest against it on various ways, in funny ways, in sending letters to their investors. Many of these examples can be found on their website, but one of the successes is that I think that we link to each other through the research and through informing each other. And then secondly, when we succeed the action, we write about it, we produce a film on YouTube, or we publicize an interview or an article on the internet. I think the linking is one of the successes, because this is the way how we also celebrate our successes, and that's very, very important, because I think in the U.S., there are also rather some successes booked, and it's important to celebrate those successes. So it's important to repeat that you have booked these successes and share them on your Hive site, on your Facebook site, on Twitter, on the Electronic Intifada, for example, or on the website of the BDS movement.
Successes, and these are rising in campuses. For example, the first campus to have had a spectacular success was Hampshire College here in Western Massachusetts. So we do have some successes, it's true. I'd like to ask you if is part of your work to lobby elected officials in individual countries or at the EU level? And if so, what results have you had with your lobbying activities?
Yes, we do. We lobby on several levels by sharing our research. We research economic, legal, and other ties which companies or others have with the occupation, and we share this research so politicians on all levels, European as well as national, understand why we protest against products such as Ahava.
And are you well received by the officials? Do they welcome you, or do they play hard to get?
Yes.
Because we were very surprised.
Those on the socialist parties and those who respect international law and human rights receive as well, because we always make the international law argument, because settlements are clearly against international law, and under the military occupation so many human rights are being violated, that those who are open to listen to these arguments, they receive as well. I must say there's always also some hesitation among the more conservative groups, and not to speak about resistance among those on the very right-wing conservative field. But in general, we have an opening into Parliament on the European level as well as on the national level. This is also something which needs to grow, I think, by becoming a trustful and reliable partner or resource. You can build your relation with Congress or with Parliament. It doesn't come overnight. Sharing your research, sharing your information on a solid base with proper arguments, legal arguments, will help to establish that relation. Although in Europe,
You know, we're very surprised to see how the European Union has this special relationship, this special trading relationship with Israel, and in fact even upgraded it at the conclusion of the Gaza attacks, which is it's unthinkable. And yet here we are. We are told that the European Union has upgraded its trade relationship with Israel. Which runs,
yes.
and Israel has violated the human rights, which are at the center of the regulations that the European Union claims.
Yes. Yes, although we have these openings, we do not have a majority which is listening to our files and research. So the ministries continue with the association agreement and the ENPI policies in which Israel has profit from tax reduction and free trade. But we'll continue our argument that the association agreement can be used as a tool to sanction Israel, because Israel should comply with international law as any other state.
Yes. Do you get media coverage in your campaigns?
Media coverage sometimes is very well. Like the last few weeks we had, despite the fact that in Holland there was a political crisis and the government collapsed, we had some front page news about the Kairos document. I don't know if you heard about the Kairos document. It was handed over from a group of Christian Palestinians in Bethlehem on the 11th of December 2009 to a group of international church leaders, and ICO, amongst others, was present. The World Council of Churches was present too. And in this document, they call it a cry for hope. They also refer to the call for BDS as a legitimate tool, a non-violent tool for action. And because it comes from Christians and it was handed over and accepted by many church leaders, the discussion in our churches started on the front page. So yes, we have media attention, but not on the call itself. But this time, yes, we do have the discussion on the call, but via the Kairos document. So in fact, we can see that we use different researches, different papers, different ways of discussing it, all leading to the same, that the occupation and settlement building and what happens under the military occupation is illegal and should stop.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the effectiveness of certain approaches, certain BDS approaches, depends on the particular company or institution. So let's look at some specific examples. Take, for example, the case of Veolia. I believe you and Ms. Adri Neuhoff have very effectively worked to force it to cease its involvement with the tram lines it was scheduled to operate between West Jerusalem and the illegal settlements in the West Bank of Palestine. You may be surprised to hear, and few people in Boston know, that the subsidiary of Veolia is currently operating the commuter rail system of New England in our own backyard. What elements of a campaign would you advocate for this particular example?
First, it would be good if you research how this subsidiary is connected to Veolia and address both the subsidiary and Veolia and ask them to stop building their light rail in East Jerusalem, because that's what it's all about. They should stop building the light rail or in East Jerusalem. When they do not respond, or when they do not respond within a proper appropriate time, you can start actions. And the Diakonia in Sweden could be of inspiration. They had a very wonderful, effective public campaigns, sharing a red card to about 100,000 people who used the train in Stockholm, the Veolia train in Stockholm. They put on this red card on their coats, and it said it protested against Veolia's being part of the city light rail path in Jerusalem. Of course, Diakonia also worked behind the scenes, went to government, wrote letters to Veolia themselves, and this public campaign added to that, which resulted in that the Veolia contract was not prolonged. And that's very effective. So it's not only about a direct success, trying to have a direct success, getting Veolia out of East Jerusalem, where it continues, but now it sold their shares to Dundas Corporation for 49%. And after 5 years, they say they will withdraw and sell the rest of the 51% to Dundas. We'll wait and see, but in the meantime, they're still there. So we need to continue, and you can ask your subsidiary to put pressure on Veolia to withdraw from Jerusalem and start actions on the subsidiary.
One starts actions against the subsidiary in that it is related to the mother company, and therefore it is as responsible as Veolia itself.
Yes.
Is that the legal approach?
Yes, but that's something to be confirmed, I think. Maybe you can ask help from jurists to mm-hmm. confirm this link, because mm-hmm. we make sure that the responsibility and the accountability are one-on-one or very direct when we approach subsidiaries. So I think that's the first step to take. Make sure that the link is clear, and then you can plan your actions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. Thank you. That's great. Very helpful. Thank you. We have a Motorola campaign here. It has been largely limited to demonstrations in front of stores that sell Motorola phones or have arrangements with Motorola. Can additional actions be taken in your view that would be effective? I understand that you have a Motorola campaign in Europe too.
Yes, we have. I'm not sure about how that is being established here. We do not have a huge Motorola campaign, though. But here, I would be inspired by the Stolen Beauty campaign from Code Pink for Peace. Mm-hmm. Do you know about Code Pink for Peace?
Yes, oh, certainly. Certainly. Who yes. doesn't?
They have this wonderful Stolen Beauty campaign, which you can find on their website too, and they planned flash mobs and demonstrations in New York recently on the 30th of March, the BDS day. They went out to the streets, to the shops where Ahava was being sold, and I think these kind of actions could be duplicated for the campaign against Motorola. Yeah. But here again, I think it's necessary to research first what's Motorola doing, and present a clear case to Motorola first. I guess you've done that, because the campaign is already off the ground. And check where it's being sold, and then, like on the Ahava case, you can go to the shops and demonstrate in front of it.
Mm-hmm. With respect to the Stolen Beauty campaign, for the benefit of our listeners, could you describe the reason why there is such a campaign, the source of the problem, beauty yes. products from the Dead Sea?
Yes, Ahava is a company which produces cosmetics made from mud and minerals from the Dead Sea. So Ahava is established in a settlement, Mishpe Shalim. And as you explained well in the prelude, settlements are clearly illegal and obstruct a fair peace. And even your president is against settlements. And like you concluded, when government doesn't do anything, we should do it. So Ahava presents a very well clear example for protest. Ahava also takes its produce from the Dead Sea, so it steals the resources from the Palestinians. It's not only the ground which is being stolen, but the resources themselves are stolen too. So that's why the campaign is called Stolen Beauty. Ahava means love in Hebrew, but the campaign says there's no love in the occupation. So the slogan refers to what Ahava is doing, and that it should be boycotted, and one should protest against it. Moreover, it's being sold as an Israeli produce, and in Europe it's clearly against consumer law. I don't know about American law on this aspect, but in Europe one cannot sell a product coming from one country as a product from another country. So there are many, many reasons, legal and moral reasons and even political reasons, not to buy Ahava beauty products. We have a Dutch group, which is a very nice group. It's the Bathrobe Brigade, inspired by the Ahava group in New York. Mm-hmm. They protest in pink bathrobes in the shopping malls to inform the people about what's happening in the settlements and why they should not buy Ahava products. They have flash mobs and very funny events which draws the attention of the media too. So this is another good example on how to campaign, and maybe Motorola campaign can also work with them to get inspired from them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I guess the Code Pink is open to having people participate in its campaigns.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not Code Pink, so
yeah.
But at least I think the website's very inspiring, and you, for sure, it would be nice to connect. But that's up to them and you, of course.
Surely, surely. Advice would you give us, would you give activists in the United States?
Link and celebrate your successes. If we can link together and we celebrate each success, like the Hampshire College, I learned from the BDS movement that the Hampshire College becomes the first college to divest from the Israeli occupation. I think that's marvelous, because it was also the first who divested from South African apartheid.
Yes.
And now it's the first who divest from the Israeli occupation. Mm-hmm. This should be front page news, in my opinion. So repeat it and repeat it. And the fact that Kirsten Davis, who is the famous Sex in the City actress, is no longer an ambassador for Ahava is a great success. Last year we found that Oxfam and Ahava shared Kirsten Davis as their face, as their ambassador for both companies or organizations. And of course that's contradictory. So after some informing and lobbying behind the scenes, we found that within a few weeks Kirsten Davis was no longer the ambassador for Ahava, and they even removed her profile from the website. That's another big success, I think. So also in the States, there are up-level, high-level profile people, famous people, Noam Chomsky, Naomi Klein, who join you on the campaigning, and who can be asked to play prominent roles in campaigning to attract the media. But I guess you know how to do that. What I miss coming from the States, and it's also in Europe something we should work on, is more in-depth research on two things: on national links with the occupation. And what I mean is that together with our network, United Civilians for Peace, we researched the Dutch economic links with the Israeli occupation. And we found that many companies in Europe, in Holland, I must say, are complicit, because many Dutch companies are established in a settlement. And we wrote to those companies, and some of them we have protested against. And this research is public. It's on the website of United Civilians. And inspired by that, SOAS in England repeated this research for the British market. It's on their website too, with the same company, the Profundo company, who specialized in economic research. And what would be very strategic, I think, if all countries could do such a research for their own corporations. Mm-hmm. Who is based in a settlement? Who is profiting from the occupation? As you know, Who Profits has a wonderful website already available, but I guess we could add to that by doing our own research, so the states could do their research and see which companies are profiting from the occupation and make it public, so others can also base their actions on these kind of researches.
Could you mention that
That's
website
one thing,
again?
I think, which can help tremendously. The next thing is to build on that and to do some more chain research on the products themselves. These companies which profit from the occupation sometimes have consumer goods available in the shops. We need to identify them and make the legal argument very clear that supporting a settlement one way or the other is illegal. And this legal argument could be built more in public. And I think that will help tremendously to base our actions on.
You mentioned that there was a United Civilians website. Is that what
yes.
it's called? UnitedCivilians.org?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the StolenBeauty.org is the other one.
It was very surprising to hear that Oxfam and Ahava shared the same representative, Kristen Davis.
Yes. When they found out, of course, they were very quick in responding. So such things happen. People, we don't know. So we need this kind of research. Who's doing what, when, where? Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy that Oxfam took this very seriously. Can I correct? I said UnitedCivilians.org. It's not. It's www.UnitedCivilians.nl.
.nl.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. NL for Netherlands, right? Yeah. You have also recently, I believe it was in Electronic Intifada, you have written an article on the agricultural products and how agricultural products are made in settlements and sold as part of having been made in Israel through the big chain Agrexco. What are the code numbers to watch out for in stores that carry agricultural products? Would you happen to know what the code number is for Israeli agricultural products?
Israeli production is 729.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I recognize produce coming from Israel on the code 7, starting with 729.
Uh-huh. Great. 7 through 9.
Yes.
Yeah.
7 to 9. And for us, one of the big problems is that also products coming from a settlement start with 7 to 9. And settlements are not Israel. So one of the targets, one of the strategies we use is to ask whether Agrexco and other companies could differentiate between settlement produce and Israeli produce, because we don't like to buy settlement produce. So we ask them to differentiate in order for us to make it more easy for us to distinguish. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we have to make unfunded decisions in the shop, because as a consumer, we can also refuse to buy it. Goods,
of course,
which might support the occupation.
Of course. But agricultural producers regularly lie anyway. And you found the same difficulty, I believe, in Europe when you asked the store managers whether or not something was produced in a settlement or in Israel proper. And they said they didn't know or gave you the wrong answer. It's hard to determine that, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Many shop owners do not want to become very outspoken on the issue because they're afraid of being too political. But since we have the European court ruling saying that produce coming from a settlement which is being sold as made in Israel, that's illegal under European law. It should be mentioned clearly that it's coming from where it's coming from, especially when we talk about biological products. In the Brita case, which the Brita, the Dutch Brita company who imports soda from the settlement, was forced by the German custom law to pay tax under the association agreement because they exported under the association agreement, and they profited from the preferential trade. They went to court, but the court said, and the European Court of Justice reaffirmed the rule that they should pay tax because it's not coming from Israel proper, and so it cannot profit from the association agreement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it looks as if we need to do a lot of homework on our side, to do a lot of research around a particular product and the relationship between the company or the division that manufactures this product and the owner of that subsidiary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you give conferences? Do you in your flyers when you demonstrate outside stores? Do you distribute flyers? What educational material do you happen to use? Do you talk about the ethnic?
We do not demonstrate ourselves. We provide the research. Uh-huh. We provide the information, and we support research like those, the research done by Who Profits, the Israeli research organization of the Women's Coalition in Israel, and other type of research like legal research or the research I mentioned, which is done by the United Civilians. We make this research available so people uh-huh. can base their actions on it, and they provide the action materials for the public. Mm-hmm. Some of the groups make films of their actions and put them on YouTube. Others provide small detailed maps so people can see mm-hmm. that it is where it is exactly coming from, and that it's not from Israel but from a settlement or different kind of materials. But we, as ICO, do not provide those action materials themselves.
I see. Well, I would love to continue this conversation longer because there is a lot more to talk about. But I'm given the signal that we are running out of time, Mickey. So let me first thank you very, very much for being our guest today. It was a real pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure.
And that does it for us today. But before we close, I wanted to point out that we do have a very strong Code Pink presence in our own neighborhoods. Just on March 31st, Medea Benjamin was here talking to us about various campaigns that Code Pink has. And we're very lucky to have a few Code Pink activists that are keeping us involved and active on this issue of BDS and the situation in Gaza. Many of Code Pink had organized the Gaza Freedom March, and our own Sana Rosh Mehdi was one of the people who traveled to Gaza multiple times. The West Bank, on the occasion of Passover, is under a total closure from Sunday until Tuesday, and I wanted to point that out on this very important holiday for Jews all over the world. Their brothers and sisters, Palestinians, are being imprisoned as this holiday is being marked. So we urge them and everyone else to stand up and join this BDS campaign to stop this ridiculous attack on humanity. Anyway, on this occasion of Passover, which started on March 30th, we wish our Jewish friends a happy Passover. And on today's occasion of Easter, we wish our Christian friends a happy Easter. And to all our listeners, we wish a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next Sunday, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Fahm and Salma Abu Ayyash signing off for This Week in Palestine.
لم تطيه موسى قزح طفلة لم تطيه موسى قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر من مخيم Yeah.